You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to this podcast series on the emerging role of oral SERDs in HR-positive, HER2-negative, early breast cancer, or EBC. This is the second of a three-part episode series hosted by Med Learning Group and designed to meet the needs of oncology teams that treat patients with breast cancer. I'm Shpatim, Medical Director of Med Learning Group, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about some of the data and rationale for oral SERDs in early breast cancer. And joining me again today and throughout this series is Dr. Rena Callahan, breast medical oncologist and clinical professor of medicine at UCLA. Dr. Callahan, thank you for joining us today.
Great, and thank you for having me.
So then moving on to a topic that is very important, potential advancement in HR-positive, HER2-negative, early BC, which is the development of a new class of drugs or next-generation oral SERDs. First, I wanted to ask, how are these newer SERDs different than the older SERDs and other forms of endocrine therapy we have used before or are currently using?
All right. So I am first very excited about these oral SERDs. They represent basically the first advancement in potentially in adjuvant endocrine therapy in over 20 years. And we've already started using them in the metastatic setting. And I look forward to be able to use them in a broader patient population. So we first started out with the SERM, selective estrogen receptor modulator, and tamoxifen is the SERM that we use for early breast cancer. Tamoxifen has both agonist and antagonist activity with regards to the estrogen receptor. They act as an antagonist in breast cancer cells, and they block the attachment of estrogen to the estrogen receptor in breast cancer cells, thereby inhibiting ER-mediated transcription. But they don't degrade the estrogen receptor. Then fast forward to the early 2000s with the aromatase inhibitors. Aromatase inhibitors inhibit the aromatase enzyme, which allows for peripheral conversion of estrogenic precursors into estrogen. So the net result is that they reduce estrogen levels. So these estrogen receptors don't have their fuel, and that fuel being estrogen. But if an estrogen receptor acquires a mutation that makes it ligand independent or active in a way that doesn't need this fuel, then they're not going to work. And there are other mechanisms of resistance as well. The aromatase inhibitors don't do anything to the receptor. They also don't degrade them. So then we have SERDs that have been approved in the metastatic setting. So SERD meaning selective estrogen receptor degrader. Fulvestrant is an injectable SERD that we've been using for 20 years. It is an ER antagonist. It's a degrader, but it's limited by its pretty poor bioavailability. And it's given as not just one injection. When it was initially developed, it was developed as one injection, a 250 milligram dose. But because of its poor bioavailability, a study was done to see whether doubling that dose worked better. And it did. So that's how we use it. Two injections into the gluteus, IM, once a month. So limited by bioavailability, it's injectable, it can be painful, and it doesn't appear to be as active as oral SERDs, especially when an ESR1 mutation is present. And this is what has led to the FDA approval of two oral SERDs, elacestrant and imlunestrant, for metastatic ESR1 mutated hormone receptor positive HER2 negative breast cancer. There are several additional oral SERDs that are under study but do not carry an FDA approval yet, including camizestrant and giredestrant. And it will be really interesting to see where they fit into the treatment landscape once we have the availability of these agents.
Thank you. And you mentioned some of this already in terms of the rationale for the emerging oral SERDs. Definitely, this is an early question to ask, but where do you think they would fit in the current treatment landscape?
I think they're going to fit in wherever endocrine therapy fits in, right? So in the metastatic setting, I think that they're already being used, but for kind of a niche group within the metastatic hormone receptor positive space. But there are combinations in the metastatic setting with the oral SERD with an additional targeted agent. There was, you know, giredestrant plus everolimus was data presented at ESMO in the Avera trial. And so that is under review and may become a treatment option in the future. In the ELEVATE trial, there were multiple combinations of targeted therapies with elacestrant. In the EMBER-3 trial, imlunestrant was looked at as a single agent as well as in combination with abemaciclib. And interestingly, these combinations, they appear to be effective, potentially even without an ESR1 mutation. And then in the early breast cancer space, there is great opportunity for these oral SERDs. Giredestrant has the most mature data behind it. Giredestrant was the investigational agent in the lidERA trial, in which it was compared as initial endocrine therapy in high-risk patients with hormone receptor positive, HER2-negative early breast cancer, compared with standard of care endocrine therapy, aromatase inhibitor, or tamoxifen. And we saw the initial data, the three-year data presented at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium this last December, and it looked great. It beat standard of care endocrine therapy by nearly 3% at 3 years for its primary endpoint, which was invasive disease-free survival. Additionally, there was a trend towards just better tolerability, which is extremely important with these agents because aromatase inhibitors and tamoxifen have been plagued by issues with tolerability and adherence because of these tolerability issues. So I see oral SERDs substituting for aromatase inhibitors and tamoxifen pretty much in every scenario in which they've been used, but we just need the clinical trial data to back it up as well as the FDA approvals.
Thank you for that great overview. And you did mention giredestrant, which has an accepted NDA in early breast cancers as of June of 2026. So I'll ask, in terms of that, where do you see the role of that agent specifically, since it is the most advanced, if it gains approval? And then I'll follow up with some of the other agents as well.
Right. So for giredestrant, hopefully it'll be FDA approved before November. And it'll be interesting to see what the label shows. The trial population was interesting, especially when we look at other adjuvant endocrine trials. So I'm comparing the trial population with the trial populations that were in the adjuvant endocrine trials with CDK inhibitors, notably ribociclib in the NATALEE trial and abemaciclib in the MONARCH-E trial. So abemaciclib in the MONARCH-E trial, predominantly a stage 3 population or stage 2 high risk. NATALEE included stage 2s, including node negative with high risk features. So this could be a high oncotype score or genomic classifier. lidERA had an even broader patient population, stages 1 to 3. So node negative stage 1 with a high risk genomic classifier, such as Oncotype, those patients could be enrolled. So my hope is that it earns an FDA approval and that it is approved across this broader patient population. And then I plan to use it. Now, what will be tricky is that the lidERA trial, the initial main lidERA study, was an endocrine monotherapy study. So it compared giredestrant versus standard of care endocrine therapy. For high-risk patients, since the FDA approval of abemaciclib for high-risk early breast cancer in 2021 and then ribociclib a few years later, we have been using the combination of endocrine therapy and CDK inhibitors for many patients with high-risk early breast cancer. So then it begs the question, would a monotherapy be just as good or not? And they have not been compared head-to-head. There are ongoing trials and new data to be presented very soon of combinations of giredestrant with CDK inhibitor. So that might give us additional information upon which to inform decision making. But this is just, you know, it's not surprising for how quickly the field changes, because you get one drug approval and then the standard of care arm is slightly different than it would have been a few years ago, et cetera. But I think it is important to have this monotherapy data because, interestingly, you know, we're not supposed to make cross-trial comparisons, but that improvement of nearly 3% at 3 years looks great for this patient population. You know, pretty much as good as the 3-year data for adding a CDK inhibitor. And we know that CDK inhibitors carry their own, you know, potential toxicities. So the option of using a monotherapy is definitely invited.
Thank you for putting that into perspective. And I know this is very early, and you mentioned some of the other emerging oral SERDs are also ongoing clinical trials in early breast cancer. Are there any differences in terms of data or patient population or even mechanisms between like this oral SERDs in totality, and do they have any implications for future patient care in addition to giredestrant?
Yeah, so the other oral SERDs that are being looked at in the early breast cancer space include camizestrant, imlunestrant, elacestrant. So elacestrant has SERD-SERM activity, so a little bit different than the others. They carry slightly different tolerability and toxicity profiles. With giredestrant, we see a little bit of bradycardia. With camizestrant, it's called photopsia or flashing lights. With imlunestrant, some lower GI toxicities. And with elacestrant, some upper GI toxicities like nausea, but all very tolerable. And they're being studied for early breast cancer in different settings. So in Cambria 2, camizestrant is being looked at as initial endocrine therapy, so upfront adjuvant. And another study with the same drug, Cambria 1, is looking at a switch after 2 to 5 years of endocrine therapy plus or minus a CDK inhibitor. Imlunestrant is also being looked at after a few years of initial endocrine therapy. And elacestrant is being looked at in the ELEGANT trial, again, switching after 2 to 5 years of endocrine therapy plus or minus a CDK inhibitor. These trials do enroll patients who have some higher risk features. So they have to be at least intermediate risk or high risk. So this is not for the stage 1 breast cancer patient with a low genomic classifier, a low Ki-67, at least not for these trials. You know, I would love to use them across the board, but that is not how they are being studied right now.
Thank you. And then in conclusion, what aspects should clinicians think about when considering potential future application of these agents to patient care in the early setting?
So in the early setting, I think whenever there is a new drug, you need to look at the label, try to stay within the label, then look at the data, see whether or not your patient would fit within the trial inclusion, exclusion criteria, and then apply it. There's a reason that a drug earns an approval. It usually means that there was, you know, a compelling amount of data that led to the approval, and we should be flexible in our thinking and continue to evolve as the data evolves. So I would say once a SERD earns FDA approval in the early breast cancer space, I would encourage physicians and patients to use it, because when we're preventing a recurrence, a distant recurrence especially, we are preventing life-threatening, life-limiting cancer. You know, we have a lot of studies in the metastatic space which are improving survival by months. But when you prevent a metastatic recurrence, you're potentially giving someone 40 years of life. You know, it's dramatically different. And so I think we need to integrate these therapies soon.
Thanks, Dr. Callahan. These are some excellent points.
And thank you so much for having me again.
And thanks to all of you for joining. Please join us on the next podcast in this series. Podcast number 3 will cover shared decision-making and considerations around safety profile to optimize outcomes. And if you haven't already listened to it, please check out episode 1, where Dr. Callahan and I talked about risk stratification in early breast cancer and the role of molecular testing. Hopefully you're able to tune in and also explore the many other types of CME programs that MedLearning Group offers. In support of improving patient care, MedLearning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, or ACCME, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, or ACP, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center, ANCC, to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thank you to Genentech, a member of the Roche Group, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity. Thank you again and have a great day.